Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Story Archives. I'm your host, Mario Busto. Another Solo Dolo episode coming up. I'm going to be covering Three Body Problem on Netflix. This is going to be episode one coverage for today. I'm recording this as of Saturday afternoon. For some reason, I'm like half asleep. I've been staying up really late lately, but wanted to quickly get an episode out there to the people who have been asking for it, to the people who have been requesting Three Body Problem. And wanted to do that before I head out, get a little bit of a workout in, enjoy a Saturday. I hope you all are out there. Hope you enjoyed your weekend. I'm probably going to edit this tonight and post it. But I just finished watching Three Body Problem on Netflix, episode one, right? I think Netflix...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, they should take a page out of, a more strict approach to their programming. You know, I wish they wouldn't release all their content at once so that a great show like this could be spaced out and work better for a podcast, right? But instead, most people who've watched the show might be done with it already. And I'm just getting into it now, rather than like a weekly drop where I could kind of catch up. I could watch one episode a week, pod about it, have something to discuss with the people, and keep it moving. But no, instead, we're going to kind of do this a little bit posthumously after the show's already over, while everybody is probably at the edge of their seat waiting for season two. And I'm going to come in here late to the party while everybody's marching on out and give you guys the coverage that a few of you have been asking for. So, hey, guys, by the way, if you want to stay up to date with what's going on Story Archives, follow us on Twitter. We usually link it in the description, and it's kind of a place that I'd like to make a quick community update. So like if we're late to posting an episode, or if we're going to cover a new show, or if I want to get the pulse of the audience on, you know, what's everybody liking out there, what do they want to listen to, I want that to be a place that we can kind of discuss, or more just dialogue, so I can get kind of a pulse on the community out there. And give you guys what you want, if it's also what we want. So let's get into it. Zach's not here again. If you want, please publicly shame him. If you want, in our emails, you can email us at contact@soapbox.house. I'm just kidding. He's actually in the middle of a move. I've mentioned this in other podcasts. He's usually my co-host, but I'm doing these solo dolo so that the momentum is not lost. And so let's continue onward. But peer pressure. I'm a firm advocate of peer pressuring and bullying. For positive gains, you know what I mean? Not like what you see in this episode as it opens up. 1966 Beijing University, kind of in the heart of the communist movement, I guess. There's counter-revolutionaries being marched out with dunce caps, and there's a lot of Chinese names that I'm going to butcher. So, I'm not Chinese, so I don't know how to pronounce some of these names, but you got Ye Zete, who's a physics... Oh, man, that already sounds bad. Ye Zete, who's a physics professor who's getting marched out there. They beat him to death with belts in a way that's kind of... reminded me of, like, Jesus's trial before Pilate, or Ned Stark, like, his sham trial at the end of Game of Thrones. His end of Game of Thrones. Oh, sorry, spoiler alert there. But if you do know anything about this show, the creators are David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who are also the showrunners slash adapters behind Game of Thrones, who brought that to television as well. And their wheelhouse seems to be in this, take a marvelous, world-renowned, world-famous book with a cult following and turn it into an incredible TV show. And the pilot did not disappoint. The casting's on point. You recognize some faces from Game of Thrones, like Liam Cunningham, who plays Thomas Wade, who is the CO to Benedict Wong's character, who I believe Benedict Wong is in Doctor Strange, by the way. And he plays Da Shi? I'm telling you, brother, I am going to absolutely butcher names in this series. So bear with me. And you also saw our beloved Sam Tully. What's his name? Sam Tully? What's his name from Game of Thrones? I'm doing this solo, guys, so I don't have somebody to banter while I'm looking shit up. But anyways, Samuel Tarly is also playing Jack Rooney in this. He's played by John Bradley, and I'm sure there's other Game of Thrones crossovers there. We also have my personal celeb crush, Isa Gonzalez, playing Augie Salazar. And I don't know why, but Isa just has found this way of getting into these iconic roles, man. And she just has a perfect female protagonist voice. It's like the oddest thing, but you either got that trait or you don't. And she totally has main character voice syndrome. I don't even know if that's a thing, but she just has a main character voice. So the moment, like, I heard, you know, sometimes it's kind of just like the tone of the way somebody speaks. You just know they're going to be the main character, but she's in there. You have Jovan Adepo playing Saul Durand, who's the black scientist who is essentially kind of like the smartest guy in the room, which he reminds me of. I always call him Paperboy from Atlanta, but the guy who plays a kind of a similar role in, I think it's Jurassic Park or one of those movies. No, it was Monarch. Was it Monarch Legacy of Monsters? I'm not sure. But he's in another series where he plays like a super smart scientist. So Saul Durand is kind of like your smartest guy in the room. He's like modern day Einstein, so to speak. So his character immediately jumps off the page in terms of being an interesting one. And all of them really do. But let's get back to the story in and of itself. We begin in 1966. You see Ye Zete, who's getting killed on stage. He gets betrayed by his wife, seemingly, which is pretty harsh. And his daughter, who, once again, also going to butcher this name, Ye Wenji. Please, if you're Chinese out there and you understand Mandarin, please let me know, grade my pronunciation of these names. But she witnesses her father being killed, like I was mentioning before, kind of eerily reminiscent of Arya Stark watching her father be killed in front of a mass of people cheering it on. And that's where our story gets catapulted from. We then kind of march forward to London in 2024. We see Detectives Dashi and Collins, which is always great because the detective assistants always like goes by just like a one name type of thing, like somewhat similar to Sherlock Holmes. And he's investigating this series of suicides of scientists, right? He says it's a terrible time to be a scientist, a shit time to be a scientist, according to him. And there's just scientists killing themselves all over the world, starting with this, I forget who, Dr. Sadiq Muhammad, I think was his name or her name. I didn't recall. No, Dr. Sadiq Muhammad. They mentioned it as the first crime scene they get to. And there's a countdown on the wall, which becomes a trend in the episode, this countdown or a mystery. And this victim has cut his own eyes out, which is a hell of a way to go. But no history of mental illness or suicide attempts, just kills himself. And then we see another suicide that hits a little bit closer to home because we meet this character, which is Vera Ye, and she kills herself after having a kind of odd encounter or interaction with Saul, where she asks him, first she encourages him that his career is far from over, that he's going to make his mark on the scientific community. And then she asks him, which is an odd question coming from a non-believer, she asks Saul if he believes in God, which is another kind of theme in this episode, where the episode starts where the guy, the Ye Zetang, who's getting pretty much beaten with belts to death in China 1966, they pretty much are, he's in trouble for teaching the theory of relativity, which they consider to be Western propaganda, and which is kind of bullshit because the actual military base that they take his daughter to later, they're practicing the exact same things that they say our Western propaganda, but I guess, you know, he got to fool the people. And then he also gets in trouble for teaching the Big Bang, which leaves open the space for God, which I was wondering where they were going to go with that, considering in communist China, you could, you know, it's a place where you do get persecuted for being a Christian, or if you're familiar with the situation going on with the Uyghurs, where they have like labor camps and stuff like that. So it's not really hasn't been historically the most friendly place towards believing in God. So I was wondering if this was an alternate universe, but then I realized, no, this is, they're definitely against leaving the opportunity for the existence of God. So at least that's my understanding as I watch episode one. If you know better than me, contact that soapbox outhouse is the way to let me know. And So he kind of opens up the question. He neither confirms nor denies the existence of God, but says that science has not brought out any evidence contrary to the existence of God, so to speak. So after that statement, he is then beaten to death, which is, I guess, kind of why I thought of Jesus in that way. And then the fact that his daughter's in the crowd and that the showrunners are the same as Game of Thrones reminded me of the Arya Stark moment, where her character journey also takes off after her father's killed. So, very similar. And hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if it worked for Game of Thrones, why not bring it here? But anyways, we go forward and we get into this world in the future of 2024 where there's essentially particle accelerators all over the world. And all of these accelerators at the exact same moment have been producing these odd readings that nobody can explain. And the people who are funding these experiments are taking it as failed experiments because the readings do not align with all of modern physics. They are breaking the rules of modern physics. And although the scientists cannot explain it and they know that it's not a failure of their experiment, they also pretty much can't refute it either because they don't understand what they're looking at. And so I'm assuming Vera, who jumps into that eagle eye looking room and jumps to her death. I'm assuming she was having the same issue that Augie was having with the countdown, and it just drove her mad, or maybe it got to zero because we meet that mysterious woman who lights Augie's cigarette later in the episode. I'm assuming that's what she meant, where you don't want it to go to zero. I'm assuming that's what she meant by that. But nonetheless, we don't have an answer for the countdown, obviously, because this is going to be kind of the mystery as we go on. And we don't know who these people are. But there's just so much going on here. I mean, Augie at the bar, when it opens up and she's there with Jin, she looks at the TV a couple times and they kind of like give you a heads up, like what's going to happen. You start to see these lines on the TV start to form. And then when she goes outside, she looks at her phone and sees them. And then she has that moment where she looks off into like the garden area and she sees them clearly. That it comes into focus and it's a countdown. And the countdown seems to be, according to the woman who lights up her cigarette, seems to be the countdown to her death. So as of now, she has, at the end of this episode, about 10 hours left to get down to the bottom of it, if we're going to figure it out. At the end of the episode, well, let me not get there yet. Let's kind of skip it forward. We continue to see the introduction of new characters to the show, where we get introduced to Jack Rooney, who used to be, an ex-researcher at the same facility with the same group of scientists that includes Saul, Augie, Jin, and I'm assuming Raj possibly used to be a scientist there before he went to the military. And they all go to Vera's funeral. We also meet Will, who is a professor who we don't see much of those characters, but we do know Jack has launched a probably successful snack company called Jack's Snacks, which is pretty great. And his character couldn't be any more different from his character in Game of Thrones, which I'm sure if John Bradley's listening to this podcast, he's probably like, you know, get off it, you know, get off it, mate. You know, Game of Thrones was a while ago. Stop pinning me to that character. But I'm sorry, you know. Samwell is just an iconic character, and this guy, Jack Rooney, absolutely kind of beats against that insecure, kind of timid character, and he's kind of the brash, foot in his mouth, quick-witted, comedic heel in this series so far. We also get the introduction to Jonathan Pryce's character, the priest in Game of Thrones. I mean, tons of Game of Thrones crossover castings here, who plays Mike Evans, who is an ex-scientist or maybe a current scientist who went and took over his father's oil company, according to Wade, right? So he is our mysterious potential antagonist who might be behind these Apple Vision Pro lookalikes helmets, which, by the way, I don't know about you if you watched episode one yet, but I was not expecting when Jin goes to Vera's house and speaks to her mother, who happens to also be the woman that we see in the flashbacks, who's pretty much taken through hell after her father is killed. I was not expecting that headset to actually be some sort of video game. And when she put it on and it was like this Ready Player One metaverse type thing where, immediately it was it introduced her to level one, I was shocked. I was literally shocked, and it surpassed my expectations of what I was expecting there. I was not cued in for that. But I was also shocked that she was able to take off the headset, because it looked like one of these scenarios where you put that headset on and maybe you can't exit until the game allows you to exit. So pretty risky bet by her to put that damn thing on, considering the last person who wore it literally jumped into a particle accelerator and killed herself. So there's that. Now, on to Yay Wenji, or let's just call her Wenji for now, because I can't with these names, because they're all similar. And I'm going to just confuse characters here. At first, I thought she was the guard, because there was like a moment when they killed her father that they all looked at him. And I thought they were all going to see some weird scientific anomaly, but no, it was just his corpse. She is taken through kind of this interesting character arc where she's taken to, I'm assuming, some sort of labor camp where she's deforesting an area around this military base. She's then given this book called Silent Spring by one of her comrades there, who introduces another potential twist into the series here, where he mentions that humans are destroying the Earth and pretty much that we're poisoning the Earth, and kind of reminds me a little bit of The Happening with Mark Wahlberg, where the force behind all the bad things happening was actually nature fighting against the humans, which is becoming more and more of a theme in movies or dystopian type sci-fi TV shows and films. So that's becoming more of a thing, probably because of the climate becoming more of a topic in the last couple of years, even though it's been pretty prevalent for decades now of theories and whatnot. But she's taken through this arc where they both fall in love. You know, she's just about to find hope. And as she is, they discover her book. I don't know if she was snitched on by her lover or if it was something that he was questioned and then he caved. I'm not sure exactly how it occurred there. But it was a similar arc to her father, who also was betrayed by his lover, right, in a very public manner. And so she refuses to testify against her father and ends up eventually being taken to the very military base that we kind of get foreshadowing on, right? This strange military base that her lover, the journalist who gives her the book, warns her about and says, hey, there's weird things that happen up there. These soldiers are losing their hair that work there. The animals are making strange noises, blah, 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 blah. Nobody knows what the hell is going on back there. And she gets taken up there with her Western propaganda education, supposedly, to help them with the very problem or thing that they're trying to break through on, which we still don't know what it is, but let's just title it the Red Coast Project, which is not specifically a weapon. It's more of a communication device, and we don't know who they're communicating with, and I pray to God it's not timey-wimey. I hope it's not this timey-wimey speaking to the future thing. That would just... There's been too many shows I've watched lately that is all about this timey-wimey past talking to the future talking to the past. Past version does an action that affects the future. Future version helps somebody back in the past. I'm tired of it, man. I'm tired of the timey-wimey stuff, and I hope it's not that. Anything but that. But I gotta be honest, when you see the scene where they emit that signal that kills all the birds, and then you see the scene at the end where the universe is blinking, where the stars are going on and off, like turning a power switch on and off, my first thought was, okay, this signal that we saw earlier in the episode is this signal that's causing this on and off in the future. I hope I'm wrong about that. I really hope I'm wrong about that. But according to Wade, that is potentially their enemy. He sees that as whoever is doing that with the stars and turning them on off and on is their enemy. And the only explanation I have for this after watching episode one is the little dialogue that Dashi has with Collins, where he says it's a horrible time to be a scientist right now. For some reason, people don't want these scientists, this specific group of scientists who are discovering this, let's just already call it the three-body problem, who are discovering this break from traditional physics of everything that they know. There's a group of people who do not want the science to be messed with. So there's kind of this mysterious element that we don't know. Maybe somebody is actually causing these scientists to have these countdowns, because when Augie's character is confronted by the mysterious cigarette smoker, she's warned to close her company. And she's pretty much threatened and said, you don't want this countdown to go to zero. So this is somebody who knows more than she does. This is somebody who knows exactly what she's going through. And I'm assuming the only way that somebody could know exactly what you're going through is if they caused it in some way. Or you got some sort of extraterrestrial, supernatural ability to know what somebody is going through. So this person who confronts Augie is going to be important to the mystery. We don't know her name yet. But I would assume she becomes a pivotal part of this. Now let's get to the universe blinking. Or maybe did I miss any details in between here? I don't believe I did. No, I don't believe it. We got all the cookie crumbs of where this mystery is heading to, from the helmet to the suicides to the countdown to the pattern of the countdown to the laying the groundwork for the science, where the premise of this show is that the physics that we know is not maybe completely telling the whole story. We got the cookie crumbs of the line that Vera delivers to Saul, where she says Albert Einstein wasn't right about everything, which opens another door to a potential new form of physics or a new understanding of physics. And then you get the God question, which is delivered right at the beginning of the episode by Yezete's wife, and as well as Vera, who asks Saul right before she kills herself. And that question, I would assume, persists throughout, and we get maybe an answer or maybe more of a mystery as it continues. This pilot kind of reminded me a little bit of Lost in a way, where your mind starts to race into all of the possibilities of what are the answers to this mystery that we're finding out about, and whether this show can truly deliver on the payoff of when we find out what that mystery is. Because to me, a show like this, of this genre, the best it is, for these shows is always when you're most in the dark. The first episode, the second, third episode, and then maybe like a penultimate episode. But the real challenge is how to make something like this that has probably a crazy twist, a crazy bit of information that we're unaware of at this point, and still keeps you hooked and makes you kind of like an evangelist of the show. And I know there's a book series out there. I'm not going to make any promises of reading it. Typically, the way we've approached series before here is to approach it strictly as TV show watchers. Not that I'm opposed to reading, but I wasn't aware of this series other than when I saw the commercial for it over the Super Bowl. So I've been looking forward to it, but in the midst of all the other series we were doing, shameless plug, Constellation and Masters of the Air, this one was on the list, but not, it had to pass the first episode test, I guess, and it did in my eyes. So let's get to the ending here. We get this back and forth where Ye Wenji is being told the true nature of the Red Coast Project, which is that it's not a weapon. It's, in fact, a communication tool they're using. But who they're communicating to is whoever is out there. Now, whatever they mean by that, maybe they mean aliens, maybe they mean the future. I don't know. I'm hoping it's anything other than time travel type stuff. I really do hope it's anything but that. But from a betting man, I'm gonna go with the timey-wimey stuff, right? And then we cut to Augie, who's with Saul, who's high as a kite. He's been smoking a lot of weed lately, probably to cope with the fact that he's lost his job, and everybody's job here in the show is not going too well. All these scientists are kind of having a difficult time. And Jack is kind of the guy who's on the outside looking in as the ex-researcher, saying, like, you guys are wasting it with this public research route. You guys got to go into the private sector, open up your own businesses, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, kind of like the guy who's like stress-free on the outside looking in, but he's probably going to get roped in because it's a interesting group of characters who they all seem to be friends with. Anyways, Augie brings Saul there as pretty much to get rid of any sort of notion that she's going crazy, I think, right? She's being told that the universe is going to wink at her. She doesn't give Saul any information as to what she's going through or what she's expecting. She just wants an impartial observer here to confirm or deny whatever she's seeing at when the clock strikes midnight. Which I do wonder if at Oxford you can actually see the stars like that. I would love for somebody to tell me if it's actually there, if there's that little light pollution in that area where you're actually able to see the stars there. That would be crazy to me. But the stars do brighten and they do blink. So the universe is essentially blinking. Saul sees it and confirms it. And we get another confirmation from characters who also have nothing to do with Augie, and Dashi and Wade, who are on the rooftop looking at the same thing. And Wade gives that ominous line of, that's our enemy. Who's behind this? Our enemy's behind this. So whatever that means, and whatever information Wade has seems to be above anybody else in the show at this moment, because he's put together that the helmet has something to do with this, and that Evans, Mike Evans, has something to do with this as well. So he's in on it. He's in on whatever's going on here, and maybe kind of on the good side of things. But I expect nothing less from our beloved Onion Knight. So anyways, let's get into some categories. Solo categories are a little different when you're doing them by yourself. Favorite characters. I got to say, if I had to pick a favorite character, I'm going to say it's Dashi and Saul, probably. The detective and Saul, who's kind of like the genius of the group. I think those two are so far stand out as my favorites. Favorite scene, I love the back and forth between Dashi and Collins, where he says, he's pretty much going back and forth in a minute. It's just such great writing, where he says, Wade's in charge of blah. And he says, who put him in charge of the government? And who put which governments? Most of them. You know, it's just, it's such a great little, it felt like kind of like an Abbott and Costello type of moment of who's on first, what's on second type of thing. And then I don't know what other categories we have, but I would like, this is a show that I think would lend itself to some wagers. But as far as love triangles go on, if you want to talk about those, there's a little thing going on between Augie and Saul, and you have something going on between Jin and Will Downing, the professor, and then Raj, who is the military figure, who I would assume is also a scientist as well. So you got that going on. You got the love triangle going on. And you got this ever-growing mystery that I'm fascinated by, which is what exactly this headset is. And it's also kind of just very eerie, the fact that the Apple Vision Pro sort of just released. And I'm interested to see how that pans out and how that comes into play as we keep on moving here. But anyways, I think that about covers our coverage for episode one. I'm planning on doing this as an episodic series, so I'm going to do one of these instant reactions for each episode. Let me know what you think of it. Hopefully, my pronunciation of traditional Chinese names gets better as the series progresses. I would take any help from any dialect coaches out there on that. And I'm glad that this show is worth it. It's episodically worth it to cover it as a podcast. So thank you all for the recommendations of those who kind of pushed us over the ledge to just start it already. And looking forward to continuing this as the weeks go on. As always, you can check out and find all our stuff. We just finished our series coverage on Constellation by Apple TV and Masters of the Air. They also have an interesting looking sci-fi show coming out with Joel Edgerton and Jennifer Connelly called Dark Matter. I don't know yet about that. I just started watching the show Franklin with Michael Douglas on Apple TV as well. Episode one is pretty good, so check that out if you like historical dramas. I thought it was a really well done episode one so far. So other than that, hope you guys have a great weekend, and as always, thank you for tuning in.